Feels like winter in here. I'm about to freeze to death. How many of you have heard of Ancestry.com? Anybody? Anybody do that? You help them become billionaires this year at Christmas? Why would you do Ancestry? Why do people do Ancestry.com? Find out how bad your ancestors were. That's one take on it. A very negative take, but what else? What other reasons? You want to know where you come from, right? You want to know what your descendancy is and what your history is a little bit. How many of you here speak a different language other than English? Anybody? A few of you? Cool. Awesome. How many of you guys speak woman? Yeah, no guys raised their hand, right? So we don't know that language. We're still trying our best to figure it out. Sorry, ladies, we're not very smart that way. Anybody related to anybody famous? Princess Diane? Cool. Wow, that's awesome. Got a little royalty blood in you. And Jim Sparlin? Couple famous people that you're related to, right? John Quincy Adams. Cool. That's good. My ancestry goes back. My mom was big into genealogy, and so I know a lot about that. We related to the first treasurer of the United States, Alexander Hamilton, who got shot by Aaron Burr. So grandpa wasn't a very good shot or something. He was too slow. But anyway, but you're all related to someone famous. In fact, you're all kind of related if you go back far enough. Because after Adam and Eve sinned, and then Cain sinned, then there was Seth, and through Seth's descendancy was a guy named Noah. And last week we talked about the flood, that everyone on the face of the earth was wiped out except Noah and his three sons. So somehow you all are related to someone very famous. Grandpa Noah. And therefore you all are related to each other somehow. From a long, long way, long time ago. So not only from Adam, you're also related to Seth, and you're related to Noah. And you come from the descendancy of one of Noah's three sons. Now last week we talked about the great flood that flooded the whole world. And the story there was that Noah was a man who was faithful to the Lord, but everyone else was wicked and they were doing evil all the time. And God finally said, I've had enough. I'm going to reset this thing. And so he had a great flood. But the interesting thing to me that I pointed out last week was Noah was the main character in this dramatic unfolding of this enormous worldwide flood. He heard God's voice. He listened. He obeyed. He built the ark. He obeyed God's commands. And he had no words. There's not one time Noah spoke in Scripture during the whole time of the flood. And the point is that Adam, or Noah, his actions speak louder than his words. And boy, did his life speak volumes. And as a result, the human race was spared because of his faithfulness, because of his actions. He didn't have to say anything. The scriptures let us know that he was a righteous man and that he obeyed the Lord. That's the key. And that's your ancestry. That's where you come from. In your blood is a righteous man. In your blood is an obedient man. Maybe a long time ago, but that's part of your heritage and that's part of where you're from. And so we're going to pick up today in Genesis chapter 9, right after the flood. I'm going to read the stories of that, and we're going to read the stories of Noah and his sons. Genesis chapter 9, verse 1 says this, Then God blessed Noah and his sons, saying to them, Be fruitful and increase in number and fill the earth. That's pretty cool, huh? So first of all, God blesses them. And then he says, be fruitful and increase in number and fill the earth. Now their command is, Go have babies and lots of them and spread out. Just go take this land. The fear and the dread of you will fall on all the beasts of the earth and all the birds in the sky, on every creature that moves along the ground and all the fish in the sea. They are given into your hands. Everything that lives and moves about will be food for you. Just as I gave you the green plants, I now give you everything. So this is the depiction now that everything is fair game to eat. This is pre-law, pre-Mosaic law, where there's kosher laws and they're not supposed to eat certain things. At this point, maybe because they're just come off the boat and they haven't had time to plant crops in a logical sense to go, okay, before they might have been vegetarians because they had the lush garden, the fruits and stuff. But everything's been wiped out, and so maybe they've got to be carnivores now. But nevertheless, the Lord says, be fruitful, increase in number, fill the earth, and you will be fruitful, and I will provide the sustenance to help you get there. Verse 4 says, but you must not eat meat that has lifeblood still in it. Cook your hamburgers a little bit, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know. And for your lifeblood, I will surely demand an accounting. I will demand an accounting from every animal and from each human being too. I will demand an accounting for the life of another human being. Whoever sheds human blood, by humans shall their blood be shed. For in the image of God has God made mankind. As for you, be fruitful and increase in number. Multiply on the earth and increase upon it. So in some ways, there's this indication that not, you know, just don't go be like animals and grab a pig and start gnawing on it. Cook it a little bit or have some process, right? And then speaking of lifeblood, he's like, there will be an account for murder. Human society will call you into account. That's what he's saying. And then note verse 7 again. As for you, be fruitful and increase in number, multiply on the earth and increase upon it. Now this is the second time in the first 7 verses that the Lord tells Noah and his sons to fill the earth, increase. So what do you think the theme here is? What's the command? Anytime something repeats itself in Scripture, you really want to pay attention because it's really being highlighted, isn't it? And so two times, the command after they come off the ark is, you're supposed to go and fill the earth. Don't just sit here on this mountain, Mount Ararat, as they believe. Don't just sit here. Or there's the mountain range, is probably more likely. Now go. Go and spread out. Verse 8. Then God said to Noah and to his sons with him, I now establish my covenant with you and with your descendants after you, and with every living creature that was with you, the birds, the livestock, and all the wild animals, all those that came out of the ark with you, every living creature on earth. I establish my covenant with you. Never again will all life be destroyed by the waters of a flood. Never again will there be a flood to destroy the earth. And God said, this is the sign of the covenant I am making between me and you and every living creature with you, a covenant for all generations to come. I have set my rainbow in the clouds, and it will be the sign of the covenant between me and the earth. Whenever I bring clouds over the earth and the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will remember my covenant between me and you and all living creatures of every kind. Never again will the waters become a flood to destroy all life. Whenever the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will see it and remember the everlasting covenant between God and all the living creatures of every kind on the earth. So God said to Noah, this is the sign of the covenant I have established between me and all life on earth. This is the story of where rainbows come from. This is the idea of God saying, hey, whenever I see a rainbow, I'm going to remember. And the cool thing about this covenant is there's no requirement on man. This is God saying, I'm making a deal with you. I'm making a covenant, a pledge, a promise. I'm making this arrangement with you, not with just you, but the birds, the critters in the sea, all the animals, the whole earth. I'm letting this be a sign and a memorial, a remembrance that I will never again destroy all of human life, all the animals, by a flood. Now, that doesn't mean there won't be floods. We obviously know that. There are floods, local floods, regional floods, major floods, things like that. But never again will the Lord, we can be assured of this, that the world will not be destroyed by a flood. There are great indications next time it's by fire. it's a whole different deal, but the Lord's going to keep his promise.
The only thing that we have to do, a part of that, is to believe.
And how many, when you think about that, whenever the waters get high, go, well, the Lord's not going to let the whole world flood. You just kind of take that for granted to go, well, I believe that. There's a part of you that's simple faith to go, I believe what the Lord said. And anytime we see a rainbow, there's this kind of reminder of the Lord in the heavens. It's kind of a testimony that it's like, God, you promised. You're still there. It's an indicator. It's a reminder that God is still sovereign Lord.
And so this is the promise. Verse 18. Now we get into Noah's descendants, and you're related to one of these guys somehow. Verse 18 says, the sons of Noah who came out of the ark were Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Ham was the father of Canaan. Now note that verse 18. There's what we call a narrative commentary. He goes off script a little bit, and in parentheses go, by the way, Ham was the father of Canaan. What do we know about Canaan? Well, Canaan is the promised land. The land promised to the Israelites that they're to go in after they are out of Egyptian slavery, and they're to go in and conquer that land. And so it's letting us know that Ham's descendants are the ones that the other descendants, the other parts of Israel, the nation of Israel, goes in and ends up conquering them. And so it's just a little bit of foreshadowing there to say Ham was the father of Canaan. These were the three sons of Noah, and from them came the people who were scattered over the whole earth. Noah, man of the soil, proceeded to plant a vineyard. And when he drank some of its wine, he became drunk and lay uncovered inside his tent. It's a long boat ride, ladies and gentlemen. Give the guy a break. You've ever heard the expression, drunken like a sailor? Well, this is where it comes from. It's in the Bible. Right? I don't know. I just made that last part up, but thank you for chuckling anyway. But nevertheless, you know, there's obviously a period of time that's lapsed here because it takes a while to plant a vineyard. It takes a while to let it grow. It takes a little bit of time for the grapes to grow. And then obviously in those days, they didn't have grape juice. It had to ferment because you can't leave it out. There's no refrigeration. All of its wine, that's how you carry it around. Okay. But nevertheless, he drank some of its wine, he became drunk, and lay uncovered in his tent. Maybe he hadn't had some for a while, I don't know why. It doesn't seem like the text condemns him, other than it just tells the part of the story. So it's not, narrative is not interested in that theological part of it, I guess, at this point. So Noah, man of the soil, proceeded to plant a vineyard. When he drank some of its wine, he became drunk and lay uncovered in his tent. Ham, the father of Canaan, note that reference. This is the second time, isn't it? And so anytime in a few short verses it mentions the thing twice, you got to pay attention to go, there's a story, and it's really wanting you and I to know who's Ham the father of? Good. You got it. Ham, the father of Canaan, saw his father naked and told his two brothers outside. But Shem and Japheth took a garment and laid it across their shoulders. Then they walked in backward and covered their father's naked body. Their faces were turned the other way so that they would not see their father naked. Do you see this story here? So Noah's drunk. He lays naked, you know, in his tent. And somehow, we don't know exactly how, but there's an intention to Ham's looking. Apparently a sign of disrespect, disgraceful, that it shamed Noah, and therefore the other brothers knew it well enough that when he came out and said, hey, I just saw dad and they're naked, passed out, they took his robe, they lifted up one to the side, and they walked backward and laid it over their dad so that they wouldn't shame him or disrespect him. And Noah's going to wake up. When Noah, verse 24, when Noah woke from his wine and found out what his youngest son had done to him, he said, cursed be Canaan.
There's that reference again, isn't it? He doesn't say Ham because, again, this is poetic discourse. Note how the language changed. It's like a song. It's a sad song at this point when the narrator goes off script and starts writing in poetry. Cursed be Canaan, the lowest of slaves will he be to his brothers. He also said, praise be to the Lord, the God of Shem. May Canaan be slave of Shem.
May God extend Japheth's territory. May Japheth live in tents of Shem, and may Canaan be the slave of Japheth. Many times in narrative story, because everything was told what we call by oral tradition, one of the ways you did, you memorize things or the stories is put a song to it. Just like we do with ABCs and other things. We've talked about that several times. So again, this is a limerick. This is a little jingle that they somehow sang over the years to let everyone know that Ham's the ones that is cursed by Noah. Shem and Japheth are blessed. And by the way, hint, hint, Canaan, Ham, is going to be a slave to his brothers. And after the flood, Noah lived 350 years. Noah lived a total of 950 years, and then he died. So as a result, this is another story. We don't know all the ins and outs, but it's just a general broad brushstroke of saying, this is how, and we're getting ready to get to chapter 10, which really follows chapter 11 chronologically, which is kind of weird, but it's going to be what we call the Table of Nations. In other words, this is how all the descendants, all the nations, and all the languages we're getting into, have how all of humanity spread across the globe, and why. And so it's kind of interesting. Look at chapter 10, verse 1. This is the count of Shem, Ham, and Japheth, Noah's sons, who themselves had sons after the flood. Note, he mentions the three sons, but then he's going to start with Japheth. Maybe he's the oldest, but he always Shem is mentioned first, partly because that's going to be the descendants of the Hebrews, and so they're the favorite child status, and it's their story. And so the sons of Japheth, I'm going to read them real quick. The sons of Japheth are Gomer, Magog, Madai, Javan, Tubal, Meshech, and Teras. The sons of Gomer, Eshkenaz, Riphah, and Togarma. The sons of Javan, Elisha, Tarshish, the Kittites, and the Rodanites. From these, the maritime people spread out into their territories by their clans within their nations, each with its own language. This is written a little bit to people that would know what we're talking about. We don't. We're going to look at a map here in just a second. The Hamites, the son of Ham, Cush, Egypt, Put, and Canaan. The sons of Cush, Seba, Havilah, Sabta, Raama, Sebtica. The sons of Raama, Sheba, and Dedan. Cush was the father of Nimrod, who became a mighty warrior on the earth. I'm going to skip that part because we're going to come back to that. Verse 13. Egypt was the father of the Ludites, Anamites, Lehabites, Nephtuhites, Pathrusites, Casluhites, from whom the Philistines came, and the Kaphtorites. Canaan was the father of Sidon, his firstborn, and of the Hittites, Jebusites, Amorites, Girgashites, Hivites, Arkites, Sinites, Arvadites, Zimmerites, and Hamathites. Note, those are the nations that the children of Israel pushed out of the land of Canaan. That's why they sound a little bit familiar. And later the Canaanite clans scattered, and the borders of Canaan reached from Sidon toward Gerar as far as Gaza, and then toward Sodom, Gomorrah, Admah, and Zeboiim as far as Lasha. These are the sons of Ham by their clans and languages and their territories and nations. Sons were also born to Shem, whose older brother was Japheth. Shem was the ancestor of all the sons of Eber. Eber is the Hebrew, where we get the Hebrew word Hebrew. So it's a derivative of Eber. And so this is letting us know that this is where the Israelites come from. This is where the nation of Israel comes from, is the descendancy and the lineage of Shem. And we're going to look at the map in just a second. The sons of Shem were Elam, Asher, Arphaxad, Lud, and Aram. The sons of Aram, Uz, Hul, Gether, and Meshech. Arphaxad was the father of Shelah, and Shelah the father of Eber. Now, if you guys are looking for baby names, this is a cool place. Two sons were born to Eber. One was named Peleg. That's a cool baby name. Oh, look at Peleg. Hope none of you have grandchildren that way. Sorry. Because in this time the earth was divided, his brother's name was Joktan. This is a reference to the division of the Tower of Babel. That's why this is not in chronological order. Joktan was the father of Almodad, Shelef, Harza, Maveth, Jera, Hadoram, Uzal, Dikla, Obal, Abimael, Sheba, Ophir, Havilah, and Jobab. All these were sons of Joktan.
The region where they lived stretched from Mesha towards Sephar and the eastern hill country. These are the sons of Shem by their clans and languages and their territories and nations. These are the clans of Noah's sons according to their lines of descent within their nations. From these nations spread out over the earth after the flood. So, let's look at our little handy dandy map. This is going to be crazy. So, I'm going to cheat a little bit here. So I can't see that with my glasses because I'm blind only close up. So this is Ham. This is what up here is modern day Egypt. This is Africa, this whole area over that you can't see. And then you come down a little bit and all the way down here, right in this cove right here, that's Ethiopia. So that's where a lot of the descendants of Ham come from, and the Ethiopians, Egyptians. Note one of his sons' name is Egypt, right? That's where you get the name of Egypt, from Ham, right? Right through here is Sudan, and then all this area back in here is Ethiopia. And so this is where a lot of Ham's, all these descendants of Ham, go up all the way up into Canaan. Note there's Canaan, which is now modern-day Jerusalem, Israel is up and through there, Jordan's up in here, things like that, right? So this is the reference over and over that they're saying this is where Canaan, and the reason that it's letting us know that Ham or Canaan is going to be enslaved, it's a foreshadowing of someday the Israelites, the people from Shem, are going to come up here, and after they get into slavery, after Abram goes there, and all his descendants go there, then they're going to come back to Canaan, which is promised to him. All this area of Shem is where, so this area is where Africa starts. So you have African descents all through here from Ham, right? And then you have the Israelites' descents from Shem. This is Saudi Arabia and all that area there. Let me change my map here. And then up here, some of here is, this is Iraq, and this is Iran. So this is modern day Iran, Iraq. And so this is where a lot of the descendants, even Shem. So you have basically the Arabic nations, all are descendants of Shem, Palestinians, Jews, Arabs, all those different nations, and many different religions as a result of that. And so you can begin to see, especially with this conflict of Canaan and all these, that when Israel says, hey, we're the blessed people of God, the descendants of Eber, and some of our other ancestry from here, you can understand why they all still to this day hate each other. Because it's no offense here intended, but just the reality, God loves us more than he loves you. Talk about two boys fighting. Have you ever seen your two children say, I'm daddy's favorite? That doesn't go well. It's worse than a mud fight, Steve. And so up here is modern day Turkey, and then you go on up and there's the little boot of Italy. So all this area, as you go on up to Europe, this is the area what they call Caucasus, which is where you get the word Caucasian. And so most of you white people out there are related probably for Jetheth. So that's where you get your descendancy from. And if you're brown-skinned, you are probably from the Arabic nations, and on up here there's Iraq and Iran and all that. And then if you're darker-skinned, from that descendancy. And in some ways, the crazy thing about this is there's not much debate in the secular world that this is incorrect, because even historians and Oxford and many studies have said, oh yeah, this is what they call the table of nations in the Bible, and this is where ancestries come from, and it's a really clearly line of lineage of all of it, especially when you think of biblically liberal as all of Europe tends to become, there's no problem. All of the European nations go, oh yeah, we're Caucasian and we're from Japheth. And there's lots of records that show that. So that's why I wanted to show you to go. This is a story of where the sons of Noah began to spread. What was the command that we heard twice? Fill the earth.
subdue it, multiply. And that's exactly what they did. They go all the way down to Ethiopia and southern Africa, or middle of Africa, and all of this area, and then all up to Europe and all over, and starting all up into Russia and all the Turkey and all that area to go. They're doing exactly what Noah was commanded and exactly what the Lord commanded them. And so that's a cool thing. And so that's also how the people began to spread over all the earth. That's just a lot of data. Some people like that. Me, I don't care. But that's it. So I'm done with that. Thank the Lord. Now, let's go back to chapter 10, verse 8. Cush was the father of Nimrod, who became a mighty warrior on the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. That is why it is said, like Nimrod, a mighty hunter before the Lord. In other words, it's almost like this is an old common saying, like a nickname saying. And when you read it in English, and this is an unfortunate translation in some ways, it sounds almost honoring, but it's absolutely not. The first centers of his kingdom, note he has a kingdom, were Babylon. You've probably heard of that before, right? It's we're going to get to that in a minute. Erech, Akkad, and Kelnah, and Shinar. From that land, he went to Assyria, where he built Nineveh, Rehoboth-ur, Calah, and Rezin, which is between Nineveh and Calah, which is the great city. So the reason I'm going back to there, when you Nimrod means we will revolt. Like, contrast that to Noah, where it means peace or comfort and rest. So you have Noah, this guy that's a righteous man. Nimrod is very much depicted as a rebel. He's a rebel warrior, like a warlord. And the hunter, a great hunter, he was a hunter of men. And so he basically had a military state of forced labor, just like militants do today. And so he was one of those first. And a mighty warrior on earth is really, in Akkadian, is better translated, a mighty tyrant in the face of the Lord. In other words, this guy, Noah's sons were trying to follow the Lord and fill the earth and subdue it. But over time, some of their ancestry in the Ham's ancestry go, forget you, Lord. I'm going to go do my thing. And he's a mighty tyrant. It's like, we will revolt. And the reason this is important is this guy is a warlord. He's the opposite of a good shepherd, isn't he? So it's good to form community and have healthy pastoral care and good shepherding. But this guy was just against the Lord. That's what it means. And his kingdom was Babel, which is where we get Babylon. And so he probably, chances are, and most people believe that he was the main guy and the leader of the building of the Tower of Babylon. And so you have Babylonia that's there. Now we go to chapter 11, verse 1. Now the whole world had one language and common speech. As people moved eastward, they found a plain in Shinar and settled there, which was Babylon. They said to each other, come, let's make bricks and bake them thoroughly. They used brick instead of stone and tar for mortar. And then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens so that we may make a name for ourselves. Otherwise, we will be scattered over the face of the whole earth. But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower that people were building. And the Lord said, if as one people speaking the same language they have begun to do this, then nothing they can plan to do will be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and confuse your language so they will not understand each other. So the Lord scattered them from there over all the earth, and they stopped building the city. That is why it's called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of the whole world. From there the Lord scattered them over the whole face of the earth. So this is the kingdom and the story of Babel. So here's the interesting thing about all that. That they organized themselves into one city, which is ignoring God's command. What was this command? Be fruitful and scatter and multiply. And so note verse 4. Let's build ourselves a city, a tower that reaches to heavens. Otherwise, we'll be scattered over the whole face of the earth. That's why Nimrod is depicted as this rebellious warrior. You go, I'm not going to do that. Let's all just have unity and come into the city, and let's build a tower, which, in again, the translation is very poor in the NIV, But the idea is that we're going to build a tower like a monument. Like you have the Washington Monument, that's an honor of our first president. It's an honoring thing. This is a rebellious thing to go, let's make a name for ourselves. This is directly in the face of God's going, you go fill the earth and represent me. Nimrod's going, let's do our own thing, forget God. And this is where the beginning of idolatry began, because you go to a high place and you build a high tower to a god. And Marduk, which was the god, one of the first idolatrous gods, was the god of Nimrod, and even after that. And so Babylon is really, Babel is means confused, but it's really a Hebrew nickname, because when someone say, well, they're just babbling, that's the idea of, that's a Hebrew idiom that they used to say if you didn't speak Yiddish or Hebrew, things like that. So they entrusted human systems for unity without obedience to God's command. In other words, this was an unholy alliance. It wasn't God's going, oh no, they're going to be so smart that they're going to overtake the world. God, in his mercy and his compassion, going, I cannot let this rebellion linger, because they'll get stuck in it and they'll stay. That's why scripture sometimes says, bad company corrupts good character. And so God judges them, he confuses the language, and they scatter. So Genesis 1 through 11, let's just recap real quick, covers about 2,000 years. This is all the story of the beginnings of things. That's what Genesis means, beginnings, right? And so this is all kind of etiological stories telling us how all this stuff happened. The flood, the Noah, the reset. You have in this story, you have the story, the main four main stories: creation, and the main character, God. In the beginning, God, don't forget, he's the main character, and it all points back to him. That's the foundation for everything we believe in. Then you have the fall. Again, main character is God, or Adam and Eve. And then Cain and Abel, and Cain kills Abel. You have the flood, and Noah is the main character. Doesn't have any lines, but he has great actions that speak volumes. And then his sons, and the one that disrespects him. And then the fourth story is the Tower of Babel. This tells us where people come from God. This is where creation comes from. This is why we can eat meat. This is why there's vegetation. This is why animals are afraid of us. No matter what people tell you about sharks, we're still the Lord over all the creation, those types of things. It tells us why there's evidence of flood everywhere, and it tells us basically why there are different languages, different colors of people, skin pigmentation, and all this pointing back to this is the beginnings of all these things. So what's the theme? The theme is, in the beginning, God did all this stuff, and all this stuff comes from God. Another theme is, mankind rebels. Just first, it's individual rebellion. Adam and Eve, their individual rebellion, and together. Cain, his rebellion. He's mad at God because God didn't accept his offering. Nimrod and his rebellion, going, I'm going to make a name for myself. Forget you, God. And Ham, his rebellion of his disrespect of his father. And then you see humankind's rebellion, where in Genesis 6:5 says, there's this wickedness of the human race that God grieves that he created us. And then Genesis 10:4, let's make a name for ourselves and not be scattered. Society rebels. So individuals rebel, groups of people rebel, society rebels. And the theme, God is merciful. Adam and Eve, in their stupidity and not trusting the Lord, they mess it up for all of us. God clothes them, and he curses them. But in the midst of that curse, God goes, there's hope, because there's woman, there's going to come from you a seed that's going to be the hope of the world. And he's talking about Jesus and the redemption. Even in that rebellion, God's merciful. And Noah, God didn't completely destroy the human race. That's his mercy. And the Tower of Babel, sometimes God's mercy is to thwart rebellion so that we don't just go on a path that has many unintended consequences and just rebellion after rebellion after rebellion. So God is splitting them up. So together, they're like two bad boys
You just got to separate them, go to their separate rooms. This is all just to get us to Jesus. Adam and Eve to Seth, Seth to Noah, Noah to Shem. Shem is a grandfather of Abraham. Abraham, the great, 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 14 times great of David. And David, 14 times great, the father of Jesus. This all, the reason it's telling us these whole stories is to get to Jesus, the seed, the promised seed of Eve. That in the, all this story, the theme is, this is a story, God's story of redemption. And God is going to work through man's ancestry.com to bring a kingdom of priests. And that's where he raises up the Hebrew nation, the children of Israel. And that nation, unfortunately, turns inward. The Jews turn inward. They get consumed with themselves. And so God made the church to do, be a new kingdom of priests to turn outward. That's our job. It's not just to be so consumed that we hunkle down, build our own city, and rebel and forget everyone else. We're to be fruitful and multiply. So what's the theme of our society? If that society had different themes, what would be the theme of our society? Don't say that out loud, but I just want you to think about that. And are you a part of its rebellion? And what's the theme of your life? We talk about ancestry, we go, oh, I have famous ancestry, or I speak this language, or I have this in my DNA. But we have a theme of our life. And you only you know it. Noah's theme was, I don't need words. My actions speak volumes. Nimrod's theme was, I'm rebelling against the Lord. Our church has a theme. And we can be either inward-oriented or outward-oriented. You have Noah and Nimrod. My word to you and my encouragement to you today is this is just the story of all these beginnings, but your life has a theme to it. But you get to pick it. You get to pick your theme. Pick what you're going to be and be it. It doesn't matter where you come from. Don't matter how we got here. It matters where you're going. And this story keeps alluding to where it's going. It doesn't matter what the ancestry was. And you'll see through Abraham's seed and the nation of Israel's seed, it's total rebellion all the time, always against the Lord. And yet God, merciful, still redeems through Jesus. And that's why we come and we worship Him and we bend the knee to go, it's His body and blood. Because why? We're rebels by nature. We have depravity. We're broken. But in the midst of that, the redemption story is you and I get a pick. I just want to challenge you today. Pick who you're going to be. Pick what the theme of your life is going to be. John picked a theme for the men. He just picked it and said, that's it. I'm going to be that from now on. I'm going to be a tree. And I just want you to consider your life this week. What's the theme of your life going to be?